Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 171, The Phantom Menace, Act 1. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the agent callous to my Sham Sandula, we have Carl LeClaire.
I thought they were going to be Phantom Menace comparisons, yeah. Jason. You let me down.
I decided to go off the beaten path on that one.
Well, what do you know? Jason, I'm excited to talk some Phantom Menace.
Yes, I am too.
I don't think we haven't done anything strictly prequels in a while, so makes sense considering Force Awakens is still only a few months old.
Yes,
it just turned 2 months just a couple weeks ago.
It did.
It's just an infant.
Congratulations on reaching your 2 month mark, Phantom Menace. Force Awakens. We're talking Phantom Menace, but. Never mind. But
glory in The Force Awakens.
Yes.
So in case you missed this at our last episode, we're going to start doing once a month each of the films by act. So act one of each film, and then we'll get to act two of each film, and you get the picture.
Yes.
So we thought this would just be a fun way to kind of dive into the films a little bit more without trying to get a whole movie into one podcast episode, because it's hard to do that, isn't it?
It is.
It's kind of tough when you really have a lot to say. The only movie we will never touch on this podcast is the Clone Wars movie, because it sucks. Sorry. Oh, boy. I'm kidding. I know a lot of people like it. I just don't.
We may do that as a special someday, but yeah.
With a special guest, not including Carl. Oh, man, Carl, you're being a sourpuss.
Yes, he is.
Jason, I'm playing with a Jar Jar action figure.
Yes, and I think that's really funny.
You know, can I tell you something that's really funny that I did while I was waiting for you to get on?
What?
I stood him up next to some of the other stuff on my desk, and of course, like 2 seconds later, he fell over and knocked everything off my desk. I'm like, so Jar Jar, like, way to screw up my desk, dude.
That is.
It's just so funny because I literally just stood him there. He was standing there, and all of a sudden he just falls over, and everything next to him just fell off because he hit like everything like dominoes, and they all just like fell off the desk. I'm like, what the heck? Even the toy is a mischief.
So Jar Jar.
Mostly because Misa clumsy. You were banished because you were clumsy.
You shouldn't be saying that.
Get ready for a lot of that.
Oh, yes.
Buckle in for some Phantom Menace love.
Yes, but before we get to that, we had a poll that we asked all of our Larians.
Yes, it was a very difficult one, Jason. It shook me to my core.
It shook you to your core.
But you were asking whether folks would prefer a blaster or a lightsaber. So what say the Larians, Mr. Hunt?
Well, in a move that I should have seen coming, we actually have three different answers. Both was one answer. We got two votes for both. Sort of a blaster lightsaber hybrid, similar to Ezra, although I know some people were saying, but not looking like a staple gun.
It does look like a staple gun. Welcome to Ezra's office.
In second place with 7 votes was blaster. And I know you selected a blaster out of, because you had to make a choice, not because that was something that you necessarily wanted over the other, but you had to make a choice, so you chose blaster.
Yeah, I guess it just harkens back to when I was a kid. I always played with I always pretended to have a blaster, not a lightsaber. So I don't know why. I didn't dislike the Jedi as a kid. I just loved Han Solo. So
right.
I always pretended I had a blaster. But yeah, so That's what I figured I'd go with, even though now I swing around my Force FX lightsaber every now and again.
So. As do I. And as do apparently many other people, because with 24 votes, the lightsaber won. So I'm not terribly surprised, but I just was curious to see what the ratio was. So it's almost, you know, 2-1 or 3-1 there.
Yeah.
Lightsaber over blaster. But yes, obviously I chose lightsaber. I've told everyone on here numerous times my ideal favorite lightsaber would be Count Dooku's hilt with a green blade. So, and everybody knows how much I like the Jedi and that sort of thing. So it should come as no surprise that I voted lightsaber on this one.
Yeah, it's not a surprise at all, Jason.
No.
I mean, lightsaber is such a... It's the iconic staple of Star Wars. Hey, staple gun, if you're Ezra. and, you know, everybody loves a lightsaber. It's so cool. You know, as Mike Cohen said, it cuts your bread and toasts it at the same time.
Yes.
And it cuts bodies while cauterizing the wound at the same time. Very handy.
Which is why Darth Maul was able to survive being cut in half.
Exactly. Thank you to Obi-Wan. You were cauterized, Mr. Maul.
Yes. Mr. Maul.
So, yes, there you have it. The lightsaber is just such a sick weapon. It's the coolest. It's probably one of the coolest things about Star Wars.
Yes, it's one of the coolest things ever.
Or in the words of Anakin Skywalker, I saw your laser sword. Only Jedi carry that weapon.
So wizard.
That's so wizard, Annie. I'm sure you'll do it this time. Do what? Finish the race, of course. You've never finished a race?
Well, not exactly.
Never even finished? Kitster's ride.
I will this time.
I'm the only human that can do it. But sorry, that's all Act 2 stuff, Jason. We're on Act 1.
Yes, we are.
We jumped the gun a little bit.
We did.
Or should I say we jumped the blaster? Be sure to write that down, folks, and never use it.
Yeah, never, ever use it. We'll have a matchup for you at the end of the show, but stick around to hear what that is.
It's a good one.
It is.
I'm very excited about it.
Carl came up with this one, so
I'm about as excited as Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan were approaching that blockade over the planet of Naboo. You know what I'm saying? I really struggled with that one.
You did,
but I was trying to segue into the beginning of the film.
Yes. Well, why don't we talk about the beginning of the film here?
Yeah, it's all about taxes.
Yes, all the taxes.
All about well, it is tax season. It's tax season, so there's nothing better than talking Phantom Menace and the dispute of taxation routes.
Yes, the taxation of the trade routes is in dispute.
Sorry. Best opening ever. Oh, no, gee whiz. Every kid's like, oh, man, Dad, you mean they're not paying their taxes? This is going to be a good film.
Yes, because it's a lot of turmoil, of turmoil over that taxation.
But Jason, let's get right into it.
Yes. So
it's interesting. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's interesting because this is a very, you know, benign setup for a movie called Star Wars. You know, taxes. But the reaction to taxes is something that was a little extreme. I think, you know, the Trade Federation goes, let's put a blockade over a peaceful planet that can't fight back.
A good idea.
Yeah.
Be a bully.
Yeah. That's the they were being a bully, but it's one of those things where looking back on the grand scheme of things, this sort of mundane-ish issue sort of like sets up the entire galaxy in a way that it's undercut the galaxy in a way that is leaving it prime for Palpatine to take advantage and manipulate everything to his ends.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as we know, the Phantom Menace in the Phantom Menace is Palpatine Sidious.
I thought it was Boss Nass, but you're right.
Well, no, he's not exactly Phantom. He's a very big personality.
Good point.
We know who he is.
But, you know, the movie begins like every Star Wars film with the ship flying by. And it's neat because you have I think it's a really cool opening shot when you watch the ship approaching this planet. That is, there are like a ton of these, you know, Trade Federation ships blockading this planet, and you have these very calm characters. You know, Captain, tell them we wish to board at once. You know, it's you have this, like, right off the bat though, you have this calming presence of these Jedi kind of flying into this very clearly tenuous and kind of messy situation. And I think that's, I think George Lucas does a really great job right off the bat of this film, because, you know, the purpose of telling the prequel stories is getting to go back to see Jedi in their heyday. And you really do get a sense of who the Jedi are. They are indeed these peacekeepers who are, they're on their way there to try to, you know, kind of put some amends to this mess that's going about. So I really like that, even just that opening shot. You've got, you know, you got the Jedi boarding, and even, you know, you have all these battle droids turning around when the ship lands, and, you know, they stroll off, and there's no opposition whatsoever, right? Like, it's not really clear if these are bad guys necessarily, right? I mean, because the Jedi are given kind of a peaceful entrance, and then they bump into a, you know, a silver C-3PO, which we as an audience know is like a good character. So, you know, villains wouldn't have 3PO, would they? But then again, Ichuta.
Right, you know. How rude. They're here on a peaceful mission, a mission of peace and, you know, negotiation. And this is what the Jedi are, their purpose is in the galaxy. They settle disputes. They get involved in this sort of thing at the whims of the Senate. And it is interesting that the Chancellor has sent them secretly, though. Which is interesting, probably because he would have received opposition for trying to negotiate with these trade terrorists. But it is interesting, and of course, the two Jedi that are sent are Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is great for all of us people who saw the OT first. It's like, oh, Obi-Wan Kenobi, yes! We get to see him as a young man. But this, like you said, this movie really is to establish who the Jedi were before they were all wiped out. And we definitely get that with, you know, their mission here. They're sent out in small teams to settle disputes, to mediate, to keep the peace. And that is, this is sort of just another day at the office.
Yes.
For Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan.
Exactly. As soon as they strew off, you know, as they stroll down that little Republic ship, they probably punched in their time cards, you know, checked in for a day's work, you know, filled out their W-2s so that they too could do their taxes.
Right.
But, you know, you get this, like, great setup, though, that as soon as they reveal, you know, they pull back the hoods and Obi-Wan immediately says, you know, I feel, you know...
I have a bad feeling about this.
I don't sense anything.
It's not about the mission, Master. It's something elsewhere. Elusive.
Don't center on your anxieties, Obi-Wan. Keep your concentration here and now where it belongs.
But Master Yoda said I should be mindful of the future.
But not at the expense of the moment. Be aware of the living force, my young Padawan.
Yes, Master.
So there you go. Yeah.
We've done the scene for you.
Yes. And, you know, and it's so great because it points to the fact that things are, right? Like, we get this in the opening crawl, too. Things are, you know, there's a peaceful republic, but things are starting to brew. And Obi-Wan senses something even deeper than just this, you know, disputed tax route and everything. You know, Obi-Wan is sensing a Phantom Menace, you know, I mean, right off the bat. And I love it, too, because then you get Qui-Gon, who is, he's our Zen master, Jedi master, who's all about, you know, it being attentive to the living force and being present. And this is such a staple of who Qui-Gon is. So we get, you know, kind of a differing aspect of how these Jedi commune with the force, too. You have Obi-Wan, who's kind of trying to be aware of this big picture, and Qui-Gon not necessarily ignoring the big picture, but again, just being more present to the moment, which is such a central part of his character. And it's nice, too, because the most spiritual elements we get from the Force in the PT come in The Phantom Menace and come from basically Qui-Gon. And a little bit from Yoda. You get this, you get that premonition of something deeper brewing.
Right. It's like I said, it's a great setup, something relatively benign, something relatively innocuous, but there's this undercurrent going on, and we'll find out what that undercurrent is in a moment. But I do want to jump forward just a little bit, because when TC-14 walks back into the room with their drinks to sort of, you know, delay and distract the Jedi, and they're talking about, you know, that there's something, you know, there's an unusual amount of fear for something as trivial as this trade dispute. Even Qui-Gon thinks this is a trivial assignment in a sense. Yeah. But I do want to say I like the way that Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are sitting at the table, because Qui-Gon is sitting with his back to the door. He's the master, and he's sitting with his back to the door. He's going to make whoever that is coming in to negotiate walk past him in order to engage. And Obi-Wan is sitting almost sideways in his chair, looking directly at the door, watching his master's back.
Very interesting, Jason.
I've noticed this, and I find it interesting. Qui-Gon is sitting in a power position in the room. He's like, I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to make sure that they have to deal with me and that I've got the upper hand before they walk in the room. Nice. And then Obi-Wan's there, you know, keeping...
Obi-Wan's the bouncer.
Yeah, he's keeping watch, and he's, you know, got his master's back. Yeah. I don't know if that was intentional when they filmed the scene, but it's something I picked up on and something I thought was kind of funny.
Well, and I'm glad that we get, for the first time on screen outside the EU, some calf being served. Thank you.
Yes. We appreciate this.
But even before, you know, TC-14 comes back, though, you immediately after, you know, they have this little conversation looking out the window. It goes to the, you know, the bridge of the ship. You have Newt Gunray and... It's not Rune Hako at that time. Who's the other guy? Droopy.
No. Dalte Dofine.
Right. And they, you know, they call up Sidious. And what I think is so neat about that is you know, it's right there in your face. So Obi-Wan has this premonition that things aren't right. Something deeper is going on. And immediately you get the force behind the Nemodians and the Trade Federation. You get Sidious right there. And
what is it?
The scheme of yours has failed, Lord Sidious.
Sidious, the blockade is finished. We don't know who gets the Jedi. It's funny that Dalte Dofine is so terrified that he completely breaks protocol and interrupts before the Viceroy can speak. I don't know.
I don't They're want funny. This stunted slime in my sight again. This turn of
events is unfortunate. We must accelerate our plans. Begin landing your troops. My lord, is that illegal? I will make it legal.
And Jedi?
The Chancellor should never have brought them into this. Kill them immediately. Yes, my lord. As you wish.
Good, Jason.
And then we get that shot of the cannon coming down in the hangar and blam, firing. Right.
But, you know, it's this stuff with Sidious... There is kind of similar to what we get with Snoke in Force Awakens.
It is.
You know, like we get information, but we don't get complete information. So what we're getting from Sidious here is he's clearly the one pulling the strings behind this Trade Federation plot, but he's also in a position of power. You know, is that legal? I'll make it legal. Like, he clearly is involved in some way in the legal process or in the government of the Republic.
Yeah, so, or he has the ability to influence those in power.
Exactly. So right off the bat, we get a sense of who this deeper threat is. And, you know, and oh my gosh, what's the heck's that guy's name? The stunted slime?
Oh, Dalte Dofine.
Thank you. He's so afraid of the Jedi, you know.
That he forgets he should be afraid of Sidious.
Exactly. And it's very interesting, too, because we do learn, again, something about the Jedi in the Nemoidian response to them. Because then, you know, Newt Gunray doesn't want to go meet with the Jedi because he knows what they're capable of. He knows that they might be able to force persuade him. He just knows he doesn't want to deal with them. And it's so funny. So that's why they send TC-14 in. And it's interesting because, you know, we do obviously get a sense that these Jedi are revered and feared by people in the galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah, when they go to settle a dispute, they settle a dispute.
Right.
You know, their job gets done, and no one else is able to really oppose that.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a quick bit of trivia.
Yeah.
Silas Carson plays several characters in The Phantom Menace. He's most known for the prequels as playing both Newt Gunray and Ki-Adi-Mundi. But in The Phantom Menace, he also plays the co-pilot for the Republic shuttle. And he's also Lot Dodd, the Nemoidian senator in The Phantom Menace. Just thought that was a fun bit of trivia.
Oh, wow.
That you might want to know. So... Yeah, he's got two of his four characters already in this movie. as that cannon comes down, Captain, look! Shields up! You know,
yeah, what is that, Captain? Is that a boy or a girl or a man or a woman? I don't know. It's a very androgynous character.
The captain's a woman.
Oh, is it? Okay.
The captain is a woman. The co-pilot,
very clear that the co-pilot is a man, like an adult man, but the pilot is like, it's whatever you want it to be.
she's a woman.
Oh, okay. She looks like she's
very
like
short hair.
She looks like a 14-year-old boy. So, well, whatever. They're dead, so that's awful.
Oops. Oops. And of course, the Jedi feel this disturbance of the Force right away.
Well, it almost makes it sound like they hear it too, because that it seems like that conference hall wasn't that far down from the hangar. They hear a kablooey, and they immediately jump to action.
Yes. Yeah. And causing TC-14 to spill the drinks. Oh, gosh. No, I'm kidding. but then, of course, you know, there's gas pumped into the room. The Nemoidians are trying to smoke out the Jedi, literally. Yeah. And they're hoping they don't have to deal with them. They're hoping the gas is going to do its work.
Yes.
That doesn't exactly go as planned.
They should be dead by now. Destroy what's left of them.
Yes.
And then they kick their butts.
Dun. Yeah. Dun, dun. I like the music and the way it sets up, and then we just see TC-14 walk out of the fog. Oh, excuse me.
It's almost like she's flirting with those battle droids. And then the other guy's like, take it out, Corporal. Roger, roger. They're all trying to impress her.
Lightsabers.
Yeah. Which is a great shot. Yeah, that's so cool. In the midst of this smoke, you just see these beams of light, you know, and then they pounce, you know.
Yes.
This is one of the coolest combat scenes in the movie, in my opinion. I really enjoy it because we do, you know, it was very clear for George Lucas. He wanted this film to be all about the heyday of the Jedi, and we just see them carving through these battle droids like they're nothing. Now, granted, battle droids are not the most formidable foe, but be that as it may, we just see, like, the way Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan deal with them, though. It's not like they're struggling to defeat them. That's what's so neat. You know, they're just carving their way to the bridge. With very little trouble at all. And you see, again, you do see, you know, some people that critique some of the fighting style of the prequels. You could easily see it even here. You know, Obi-Wan does a lot of weird spin moves before he hits a droid, which really isn't necessary. But to me, like, my interpretation of that is their form of combat is, it's stylized for a reason. It's kind of the flow of a Jedi, I think. That's the idea.
It's a dance,
exactly,
in a sense.
Exactly. But, you know, and then you have, you know, close the blast doors.
Right.
That will hold them.
And then it doesn't.
Yeah. And I love that, too, because then, you know, Gunray exclaims that that's, you know, this is impossible. And you see, again, that these Jedi defy.
Are capable of, right. They're capable of defying the impossible.
Exactly.
You know, they do the impossible. They defy what should happen.
Right. So what's impossible for normal creatures is not impossible for a Force user, which I just think is really cool. So again, it's kind of setting up this mythological spiritual element from the beginning that for somebody with the Force, certain things are not impossible that would be for others. So I think that's really cool. And of course, they are forced to run though. Then when the battle or the droidicas show up, destroyer droids.
Destroyer droids show up. They're no match for droidicas. So. They've gone up the ventilation shaft. Sorry. And it's great. In less than 10 minutes, we get what we need to really know about the Jedi. There's a master Padawan relationship that happens between these. They are peacekeepers. They go out, they do these missions to keep peace, and they are BA fighters.
Yes.
we know all we need to know, really, the basics of what we need to know about the Jedi in this era in less than 10 minutes into this movie.
Yeah.
George Lucas was like, we need to set this up so that we can get all that out there right now. And it's great. So, and it's a fun sequence. Like you said, it is that whole battle sequence on the droid control ship there. I really like it. It's a fun sequence. And it was, as a kid, you know, watching it at 10 years old in the movie theater, I was like, oh, this is great. This is why I love the Jedi. So that was like, that set my imagination off, you know, even more than the original trilogy had. So, but we then see them go down to the hangar where the invasion army is loading up and getting ready to depart.
It looks like an invasion army. This is an odd play for the Federation.
Got to warn the Naboo. Contact hands for Valorum. Let's split up. Starboard separate ships and meet down on the planet.
Well, you were right about one thing, Master. The negotiations were short.
I love the fact he's totally trying to not really hide his smirk about the joke he's just made.
Yeah, I love it. Obi-Wan, you little funny boy.
Yeah, you little goofball.
And I like that line too, because I randomly said it one time and now my girlfriend says it all the time. We were like going out one night and she was getting ready and I was just standing in the middle of my living room looking out the window with my hands behind my back, very Jedi-like, I might add. And I just said that line to myself. I didn't think she was in the room. I was just like, you were right about one thing, Master. The negotiations were short. She's like, what did you say? So I just repeated it. She goes, who are you talking to? I was like, I don't know. I was just thinking about the Phantom Menace. you're weird.
Weirdo.
But then you get, you do get this really cool holo projector. Well, a new type of, it's not a holo projector, I guess, but you get this really cool view screen that kind of bubbles into existence. And then you have, Queen Amidala, who is in no way intimidated by the Trade Federation, and that little dialogue that happens.
Right. She's definitely, she thinks she's got the upper hand now because she's received word that the Chancellor's ambassadors are there and that there's going to be a settlement created. Unfortunately for her, some things have happened that she's not aware of, and Newt Gunray is trying to blow it off like, they didn't show up. I don't know. There's nothing going on. You're mistaken. She's not entirely certain she believes him, but she has no proof to continue on, making these threats and claims. So,
yeah.
She has to end the conversation with, we will see.
And I love the shot immediately after that, because then we finally get to go down to Naboo. And this is, to me, one of the coolest shots in Star Wars, because George Lucas is known in these films for doing some great cinematography and giving us great sense of place and setting. And you get this beautiful view of the Theed Palace with the waterfalls, and you have this really tranquil music. And again, even though we've had like a short combat scene, and we obviously know that the Jedi are, they're on the run now immediately, right? Like we know who the villain is, but at the same time, there is still this sense of calm and peace. And that's what I like, this is before things really hit the fan. It's indicative of the state of the galaxy. Things haven't gone completely wrong yet. And you do still, Naboo kind of, to me, kind of symbolizes the state of the galaxy. It's at peace, it's tranquil, I love that shot that we get of the palace. And
it's such a beautiful shot.
Yeah, I think, let's see if I can find that piece of music real quick, because I just love it. It's very short, but I forgot that I have the, thank goodness for the Phantom Menace Special Edition soundtrack.
No kidding.
With like 35,000 songs.
We need Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith versions, Lucasfilm.
Exactly. Okay, here we go. I think this is it.
That may be during their conversation, we'll go into it.
Yeah. I don't know how to fast forward because of where I'm doing it.
Oh man, I've got the movie playing in the background.
Oh, here we go. Here it comes. Oh no, maybe that's when they're talking.
that is.
So I have it in a different, like, of a weird format, so I can't fast forward.
That almost sounds like boss nuts. No, that may be when they're talking.
Yeah.
But I've got but the movie paused on that shot, and it's so gorgeous.
There's so much, like,
birds flying up in the background.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's... Okay, come on. This is too long of a track. Oh, I just realized I could have pulled this up on... Here we go. Here it comes.
I don't know, but we must...
all publication down there.
Yeah. Well, it just took us 5 minutes to find, like, a... Oh, man, I just figured out how to fast forward, too. Dang it. Oh, well. Sorry, everybody, but it took us 5 minutes to play 20 seconds. Not even. But anyway, right. Yeah, it's just such a, like, a beautiful piece of music. And it does. To me, it captures that tranquil, that, you know, tranquility of the galaxy at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, let's move on. I love that shot.
Yeah. But then we get to the Queen talking to Palpatine, and the communications cut out, and we realize, oh, crap, they're really cut off now. And Panaka says that they're going to be no match against the battle droids that are going to be invading now. And Sayo Bibble, always the pessimist, to say, you know, loss of communication can mean only one thing, invasion.
He's not wrong.
He's always the pessimist.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, you get who the Queen's character is. It's very clear that this is a pacifist planet, and she says, I will not condone a course of action that will lead us to war.
And then we go right into the droid march and the descent of these giant invasion ships, and it's like, oh, well, war is coming to you.
Right. Yeah.
But sorry, did I cut you off? Did you want to say anything else about the Queen?
No, that's it. You know, I mean,
okay,
yeah. So, yeah, and then you get the invasion force, and and then it goes right down to the planet with their, you know, the planet side take of it, and you've got Qui-Gon on the run, and you know, the new Gunray contacting the droid army to say keep a lookout for these guys, you know, because they're still at large and they could be an issue.
Yes, it could be an issue.
And then we meet everyone's favorite character, Jar Jar Binks.
Hello! Musical Jar Jar Binks, Mrs. Humble Servant.
Oh, that won't be necessary.
Oh, but it is. She's demanded by the gods, it is.
Oh, no.
Oh, no!
Get down. Get down!
Get down!
Arnold shows up in the movie.
You saved my again.
What's this? And Obi-Wan says that with such disgust. He's like, what's this? He's not, who is this? It's, what's this?
Yeah.
Obi-Wan is not the kind-hearted old gentleman that we know from A New Hope yet.
No.
He's a little bit judgmental.
Yes. See that later on with Anakin.
Yes. Yes, we will.
But, you know, Jar Jar is obviously... Jar Jar's introduction is probably the most disputed moment in Star Wars, period. Because I would say that at the time, the majority of adult fans hated this, and the majority of young fans loved this. You know, that was
Definitely attest to young fans loving it. When The Phantom Menace came out, Jar Jar was my absolute favorite character.
There you have it, everyone. When it came out, I thought Jar Jar was kind of annoying, but I didn't like hate him. And I think that was kind of the purpose of his characters. He's kind of supposed to be annoying and a klutz and disruptive. And that was my interpretation of him. I think I was 13 when the movie came out. So I wasn't quite old enough that I was like these old OT fans were like, this doesn't belong in Star Wars. But I also wasn't young enough to be like, oh, he's so funny and I love him. So he was just kind of, he was just an annoying character, but he fit fine into the story, I thought back then. And, but what's so interesting about him, at least in the story, is he is. He is this unlikely character who doesn't really ever belong in the story before. But what's interesting is Qui-Gon kind of does see some potential in him. You know, at first he's like, you know, you're in the way, get out of my way. And then Jar Jar insinuates that he could take them to a city, which is what they're looking for. So immediately Qui-Gon, in a kind of a utilitarian way, it's not so much compassion, I think. At first it's utilitarian, but you know, a city, can you take us there?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Jason,
well,
no,
actually,
come on.
on second thought,
it's a city.
Uh-huh.
Can you take us there?
On second thought, no. Not really, no. No.
No.
It's embarrassing. But, my friend might have been banished. My forgotten. The bosses would do terrible things to me. Terrible things if me going back there.
Do you hear that?
Yeah.
That's the sound of 1,000 terrible things heading this way.
If they find us, they will crush us, grind us into tiny pieces, and blast us into oblivion.
Ah. User point is well seen. This way. Hurry!
Obi-Wan takes so much relish in freaking Jar Jar out in that moment.
Yeah.
He has so much... takes so much delight in terrifying Jar Jar right there.
And then we get another funny quip from Obi-Wan, though. You know,
me warning you, Gungans no liking outsiders. So don't expect a warm welcome.
Oh, don't worry. This hasn't been our day for warm welcomes.
And then we get Oda Gunga.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty city.
It's beautiful. It's another
golden.
Like,
yeah. Golden bubbles in the middle of the ocean, and they're all connected, and it's really unique, and we hadn't ever seen anything like this before. You know, George Lucas is taking the opportunity and the technology that he had at his disposal during the Phantom Menace to show us some new things in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent hours in the pool pretending I was swimming down to Ota Gunga after watching this movie.
That's great. I wish Otto got
not joking.
I believe you. I mean, everything on Naboo that we're presented with visually is stunning. You know, you first get that shot of Theed, and now you get this stunning shot again accompanied by beautiful music of them making their way to Otto Gunga. Get these cool little bubble walls that you can walk through. And you do, you know, and you get a sense right off the bat, Jar Jar is really not welcome there.
No.
And
no, he's not supposed to be there because he was banished.
Right. So he's an outcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, again, you know, that's what's, I think to me, that's the most important element of Jar Jar's character is his mythological standpoint. He's an outcast character who becomes a character of some importance.
Yeah.
Not tremendous importance.
And also, if you look at it from a bit more of a Shakespearean perspective as well, which the prequels definitely brought in a little bit more Shakespearean take on Star Wars than the OT did, he falls into the category of the fool. And there's a couple of different types of fools in Shakespeare, but they all end up being useful at some point, or, you know... They're outcasts, or they're the most insightful characters in the play. But either way, they end up being useful in some way. So this is another way to look at Jar Jar from a literary standpoint, if you want. So,
yeah. But then you have, you know, this... You get this great scene with them trying to negotiate with Boss Nass. And I like that Obi-Wan's the one kind of leading it when we come into it. You know, and... Actually, I guess that's not true. Qui-Gon starts it by, you know, kind of saying, you know, we've got to warn the Naboo. There's this threat coming. You know, I think there's even this hope that they'll help, you know, that the Gungans will also help unite with the Naboo. But it's way too soon for that to happen yet. Because
right. We
learn from Boss Nass, they don't like the Naboo. They in their perspective, the Naboo are elitists, and they see the Gungans as just like a backward people. You know, it'll be interesting to see that's not necessarily the take we get from the Naboo later in the film. So we don't know exactly where that perception comes from, but that's the perceived way that the Gungans see themselves being interpreted by the Naboo people, is that they're the elite, they're the foolish, you know, swamp dwellers.
Yes. The primitives.
Right, exactly. So they obviously refuses in any way to help them. And so then Obi-Wan, I love it, because Obi-Wan kind of just throws some, like, biological philosophy at them, yeah, by saying, you know, you and the Naboo form a symbiont circle. What happens to one of you will affect the other. You must understand this. And he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, think of if there's an alien invasion of Earth. If all the countries don't set down their petty differences, we'll all slowly be annihilated. You know, hello, Independence, yeah, Day. Great movie.
Right.
You know, that's kind of what Obi-Wan's trying to, you know, just saying, like, you're sticking to these, like, these stereotypes that seem to be between your two cultures. You're being stupid and petty, though, basically, is what he's saying. So,
yeah.
You do nothing now, it's just going to lead to your own demise as well. But Boss Nass is very hard-headed and saying, nope, we're not going to help. So then, of course, we get Qui-Gon kind of force persuading him to help move them on their way.
Yes. Yeah, so then speed us on our way.
We're going to speed you away.
We could use a transport.
We're give you una bongo. The speediest way to Naboo is going through the planet core. Now go.
Thank you for your help. We live in peace.
Yes.
He should have done a little jig.
And it's funny, even though he's being mind tricked to work, you know, for the Jedi's perspective, Boss Nass is still like, let's get them out of our hair by sending us through the dangerous core.
Yeah.
<You know? laughs>
Well, and even think about it, there could even be some ill will then from Boss Nass and hoping that they don't make it, because he'd love to see the Naboo fall. You know, right. There seems to be such a strong dislike for Boss Nass of the Naboo. Mm-hmm. Again, from his perspective, it's because they did it first. Right. I mean, there's a lot of pettiness there. But it's very interesting that Boss Nass, it almost kind of sends them off to die.
Right.
In hopes that it will, you know, get them out of his hair, but more so screw the Naboo.
Right.
Which for him, it's an opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
But then, of course, they're leaving and Jar Jar speaks up. And this, to me, is the first time Qui-Gon takes compassion on him. Because this isn't, you know, there's still some element, I think, of utilitarianism, because, you know, Jar Jar kind of insinuates that he might be able to help them navigate this.
Right.
Whether or not Qui-Gon believes it doesn't matter, but he finally steps up and says, you know, this guy owes me a life debt. Your God's demand is life belongs to me. So Jar Jar gets freed. And I think this is, again, Qui-Gon does take compassion on Jar Jar. And he makes Jar Jar no longer just an outcast. That's huge.
Yeah.
For the type of character Qui-Gon is.
It's definitely responding to the will of the Force in that, mm-hmm, in that regard.
He's aware of the living force.
Yes.
That's
unlike his Padawan.
Right.
but of course, Jar Jar's like, oh God, what did I get myself into? Yeah. You know? And then they leave in the sub and he's just like, this is crazy. This ain't nothing. Then we start getting a little bit more into Jar Jar as to, you know, why he was banished. And it turns out, you know, he boomed a gasser and crashed a boss's Hayblibber. And what that means is he blew up basically a bubble projector at a fancy dinner party, and the entire bubble, you know, burst and got flooded. And then at another point, he crashed Boss Nass's personal sub.
Whoops.
Yeah. So that was why he was banished.
Right. So it's all unfortunate, because Jar Jar is not banished because he's a evil person. He's banished because he's an inconvenience.
Right.
So I think, in some degree, I don't know if George Lucas is intending this. We as Star Wars fans tend to read into things.
We do.
But I think, in some degree, it could be a commentary on society dealing with any people of an inconvenience. You know, anyone with handicaps of all sorts, you know, mental or physical. A lot of times it's policymakers who tend to push them to the side because they're a nuisance. And I think that's right. The thing. Jar Jar is not an evil person. He's just a klutz, you know.
Right.
He's that's just all he is, and he's obviously has a heart of gold, but he's cast out because he's an inconvenience. And I think that's a nice little commentary on, you know, on our own real world, of the fact that, you know, a lot of times we tend to do that. You know, people that are an inconvenience to us, we just count out and push to the side immediately. So yeah. I like that. You know, again, I will never love Jar Jar, but again, I love what George Lucas was trying to do with the character.
So very nice. And I love what George Lucas is trying to do with the character, and I love the character himself. So there we go.
You're the Qui-Gon to my Obi-Wan there.
yes.
So obviously they take this, you know, where are we still going? You know, Jar Jar clearly doesn't know what the hell to do, you know, which is funny.
He's like, I don't know. We get this nice sequence with the monsters and everything. It's basically something to help keep the tension up while they make this journey.
Right. Such an integral part of Star Wars is contesting with monsters, you know?
It is.
When I was reading the Making of Star Wars book by J.W. Rinzler, the Dianoga sequence used to be so much bigger. The Dianoga was supposed to be such a huge creature fight in the film. They ended up cutting it down so much because it wasn't doable at the time with, you know, their technology. But George Lucas obviously was very big on using creatures to present problems for our heroes. And we see that in so many Star Wars films. Pretty much every Star Wars film has some sort of creature battle. And they've all been great, except the Wrath-tars.
The Wrath-tars
are so stupid. Sorry, anyway.
I don't like the Wrath-tars.
I think the majority of people don't like the Wrath-tars.
But and Revenge of the Sith doesn't have a monster fight.
Oh, that's true. Revenge of the Sith is a very different film, I think, on purpose.
It was going to have a monster fight. There's that shot of Obi-Wan climbing out of the water on Utapau after he's, and there's the probe droid that comes around the corner, and one of the Utapau swamp monsters was supposed to attack the probe droid and then try and attack Obi-Wan, but they had to cut that for time, I think. So
yeah. Well, I guess to some degree, Sidious himself is a monster, so.
Well, that is true.
Yeah. But anyway, you get this in that underwater sequence where they're going through the planet core, you get Jar Jar's backstory, and you also, again, get Qui-Gon reiterating that, you know, the Force is guiding them, which I really like. Right. And, you know, they are just such a sense of calm, and Jar Jar freaks out the whole time, which makes sense. They are facing their inevitable doom several times here, so he's understandably freaked out.
Jar Jar is reacting more like how we would react than how the Jedi react, because the Jedi are exceedingly calm and unperturbed by the entire situation.
Don't worry, we're not in trouble yet.
They're so zen in these crises, and Jar Jar is an extreme reaction of what I think most of us would do.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be panicking. You know,
Jason, what yet?
Yeah, thank you, I was trying to set you up. Don't worry, we're not in trouble yet.
What yet? Monsters out there, leaking in here, all sinking to no power? When are you thinking we're in trouble?
Then obviously, you know, he starts freaking out about the monsters, and Qui-Gon uses a force.
Yeah, monsters back!
And Qui-Gon uses a force move, it seems like. You know, he calms him. You know,
calms him is a bit of an understatement.
Right. Probably just knocks him out.
Yep. Right.
Kind of like Kylo Ren to Rey, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't worry, we have what we need.
Jar Jar's eyes just sort of cross a little bit. Yeah. His eye stalks cross. I think that's funny.
Then we finally get back to Naboo, and we see that they've captured the Queen. Viceroy, we've captured the Queen.
Victory.
Which mustn't have been very hard, because there was like no combat put up against them.
Nope, no resistance.
But, you know, so we have some sort of weird plot device that's going to drive part of the film, which is getting the Queen to sign some sort of treaty. We never get unpacked what that treaty is. In a sense, it's a MacGuffin. So, you know, the queen, obviously she's young, but she's very tenacious and very strong willed. You know, I will not cooperate, you know, now, your highness.
In time, you will see the suffering of your people will persuade you to see our point of view.
Yeah.
Command.
Yes, sir.
Process them.
Roger, roger. Oh, no. Take them to Camp 4.
Captain. Okay, take them to Camp 4. Roger, roger.
But anyway, yeah, we... And meanwhile, of course, you know, the Jedi and Jar Jar have made it to Theed, and they're sneaking around, and they run across this group being taken to Camp 4. But it is interesting, yeah, that there's this treaty, and I think basically what the treaty is it's going to be this thing that the Trade Federation can take to the Senate and say, see, you don't need to interfere here.
Right. Well, yeah, because it legitimizes their occupation there.
Right. As he says. So, but then, of course, we get the nice little rescue sequence.
Right.
And between the Jedi and the Queen and everything. So, yeah.
And to me, the neat thing about all of the rescue sequence, and both when they rescue them right there, as well as a few moments later when they, you know, then take out the droids in the hangar, mm-hmm. it again reiterates that, as Qui-Gon says, won't be a problem. You know,
right?
It just, they have no issue overrunning these droids. And then, of course, we get Qui-Gon convincing the Queen to come with him to Coruscant. Because right. to him, it's going to take her personal... Well, it's actually, he doesn't see that. He thinks if she stays there, they're going to destroy her, which we don't know. And Sayo Bibble even says, you know, but, you know, Chancellor Palpatine will need your help. You know, so... they know that if the Queen goes, it might help their situation a lot more because she can be an in-person witness to what's going on and plead her case.
Right. And a respected witness.
Right.
Too. One that will be taken seriously, hopefully. And so, of course, that gets the Queen and her handmaidens, which one of those handmaidens is very important, off planet. And we get, obviously, the escape from Naboo, where they get damaged, and which, of course, will send them
real quick,
Tatooine.
Before that,
yes,
we have the freedom of the most important character in Phantom Menace, Rick Ollie.
Yes,
but it is interesting to me that when Qui-Gon approaches the droid commander, his first, they don't just go in there guns blazing.
Mm-hmm.
He goes in and tries. He just says, "I'm an ambassador for the Supreme Chancellor. I'm taking these people with me." The droid obviously knows he's a Jedi. You can tell by the way he's dressed. So he, to me, it's interesting because he is trying to use negotiation first, right? He doesn't immediately pull out his weapon until you're under arrest, and they, you know, pull up their guns, and then obviously he whips out his laser sword and crushes them. So
yes, it is a great sequence. One thing I do notice is that when everyone rushes up the ramp into the ship, Jar Jar sort of stays at the top of the ramp to try and wait for the Jedi to make sure the Jedi get on board before they close the door. If you take a quick look at that last shot when Qui-Gon is deactivating his lightsaber and Obi-Wan is running up the ramp, you'll see Jar Jar at the top of the ramp peeking out, going, you know, waving at them, trying to get them to hurry up. I just thought that was funny.
I noticed that
this time around.
Yeah, I've never noticed that. Makes sense, too, though, for his character because... Qui-Gon's is really only his only witness of legitimacy, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't probably want to be on a ship full of Naboo by himself.
No, and Obi-Wan's not necessarily going to stand up for him, so
exactly.
He needs Qui-Gon there.
Yeah. That makes sense. That's cool.
And then, of course, we get the great sequence where R2 saves the day because that's his job.
Of course. And the best Jar Jar line of all time. Hello, boys.
Hello, boys.
I love that. But yeah, no, so R2 saves the day, which is what R2 does in Star Wars films.
It is. It is. And then we get Newt Gunray having to give the bad news to Sidious.
Right.
Which is what he was trying to avoid with the Jedi escaping earlier, but he's not happy. And then, of course, we learn, Sidious isn't the only Sith. We've got another one out there.
No, there are two of them.
We should not have made this bargain.
Yeah, and it's cool because you have something that's going to drive the plot more so because, you know, you maybe get a sense that, okay, finally, like, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and these Naboo that just escaped, they can all just kind of go, you know, that sigh of relief. But then we immediately go to Sidious, and here comes this devil-looking character who's going to hunt them down. So
right.
there is this sense of danger still following our characters.
Oh yes, they are now the hunted,
mm-hmm.
And the one who is doing the hunting, not someone that we really want to encounter.
Right. It's like in Jurassic Park when Robert Muldoon says, "No, we can't run. We're being hunted." By the Velociraptors. Great movie, by the way. Sorry.
Anyway,
yeah. So obviously now we've got Darth Maul who's going to hunt them down. And Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon make the decision that they're going to go to Tatooine. They have to pitch that real quick to the queen. And it's neat and that...
Panaka's disagreement, right. The queen agrees with the Jedi.
I do not agree with the Jedi on this one. You must trust your judgment.
Your Highness. Which she
does. And it's neat, too, because as soon as, you know, Obi-Wan's like, "Here, Master Tatooine." We as a Star Wars audience, Tatooine is a sacred place. It's where Luke is from. It's where hope comes from. So, you know, we as an audience know that something big is going to happen on Tatooine. It is, it's a sacred place for the Star Wars universe because it's a nowhere place that means so much.
Yeah. But Obi-Wan's like, "Oh, yeah, it's small, out of the way, poor." Yeah, the Trade Federation have no presence there.
How can you be sure?
It's controlled by the Hutts.
You can't take her, Highness. The Hutts are gangsters. If they discovered her,
it would be no different than if we'd landed on a system controlled by the Federation. Except the Hutts aren't looking for her, which gives us the advantage.
And that little line by Qui-Gon implies, again, the reach of the Trade Federation, obviously. So they have to be wary of where they go next. So that's important, too. But yeah, and kind of where we're going to wrap up our Act 1 part, though, ends with this little scene with Jar Jar and Padme.
Yes.
And I think it's a really cool little scene because Jar Jar, like, he kind of leans around. Like, again, he doesn't just walk in and try to make friends. He's wary of her. It seems that the Gungans, more so than the Naboo, are very wary of the Naboo. So he says...
They feel persecuted in a sense, I think.
Yeah, right. But she immediately welcomes him. "You're a Gungan, aren't you?" She doesn't... It's all about the delivery, right? If she'd been like, "You're a Gungan, aren't you?" Like, if it had been delivered like that, it would have been with something with, like, some disdain. But it's just kind of an innocent question.
She's never seen a Gungan before.
Exactly.
In real life. And that's sort of the implication you get. She's never encountered a Gungan. She doesn't know exactly what to expect from a Gungan. And so,
"Have you ever encountered a Gungan before?" "No,
but I don't." "Seal off the bridge!"
That's probably many of the OT fans' reactions to Gungans.
"Seal off the bridge!"
But I like Jar Jar's story to her because to me, at this point, as Act 1 ends, in a sense, he sums up our story.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sums up to me the story of the Star Wars galaxy now. So everything, you know, your day starts normal like any other day. Things are going fine. You're just doing your thing. And then, boom, something huge happens. And that's...
"Boom, just very scared and grabbing that Jedi and pow, Misa here."
And I just think that's such a, you know, to me, it's somewhat analogous to the Ewok tree hut scene, you know, where C-3PO retells our OT story. You know, in a sense, Jar Jar is retelling our story up to this point. Things have been normal, but now all of a sudden... Things are not. Yeah. I mean, that's so big in literature, especially biblical literature. You zoom in on a very specific person or a couple people, and their story is indicative of the story at large. And I think that's exactly what Jar Jar is doing. It's a very small, specific story just to him, but it's indicative to the galaxy at large. Things just went pow.
Right. Things are just normal, just getting breakfast, and then all of a sudden, pow! There's horrible things, and there's a Jedi, and we're here. You know.
Right.
I like it, and obviously I like the scene because I like Jar Jar, and I can quote it backwards and forwards, which you've had me do on many occasions. But
yes.
But yeah, that's where we wrap up our Act 1 of The Phantom Menace, and it'll be interesting to see... Moving forward, when we do Act 1 of Attack the Clones next month.
Actually, Jason, sorry, I thought I was going to tell you this before. I thought it'd be fun to go episodes 1, 4, 7, and then 2, 5, well, 8 if we get there in time. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, maybe we will do that.
So it'll either be A New Hope or Attack the Clones next.
we'll figure that out. But it'll be interesting to sort of compare... how Act 1 of The Phantom Menace is in comparison with whichever movie we're going
to
go forward.
Well, I
with.
Think it'll match up more to act one of the first movie of each trilogy, though, right? I think that's kind of where they're going to match up more. But we'll see what we do.
Yeah, we'll see what we do. We'll either skip ahead through the trilogies, or we'll go all the way forward, which is like our two options that we have available. But anyways, I'm saying redundant things like normal. but as we figure that out, we will continue on our act by act delving into these films next month. But before we wrap up, Carl, came up with a new matchup.
I did. So I figured it'd be fun to do a Phantom Menace character against a very popular movie right now called The Force Awakens character. So yeah. We've got in a I guess like a blaster combat battle, or just combat in general, Panaka versus Finn.
Yes. Captain Panaka versus Finn. And I'm curious to see what people think about this. I think this is going to be close.
Yeah, we'll find out.
I don't know. I mean, I've said that before, and then it's been a landslide, so yeah. Who knows? My predicting skills on these matchups are not – I don't have a good track record. but before we wrap up, we also have the final episode of the Return of the Jedi radio drama, correct?
Correct. So we are up to episode 6 in the last episode of the radio drama called Blood of a Jedi.
Blood of the Jedi.
So if you want to stick around for that, it'll be on right at the end of the episode.
Yeah. And if people want to respond to the matchup or our Act 1 discussion or the radio dramas or anything else, where can they do that, Carl?
Well, on Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslairpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampaslair, or shoot us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. And a quick thank you to quite a few of you. I think we've gotten 3 or 4 new reviews in the iTunes store just in the last half month. So thank you to those of you who took the time to write the reviews. They all were positive, too, which certainly makes us feel good.
Yes.
And so thank you again for taking the time to do that. It certainly helps in our queue in the iTunes store. So thanks again for taking the time.
Oh, and folks, go and check out the Star Wars Podcast Awards website. There's a fan-run podcast awards for Star Wars shows, obviously. They're in the process of voting for different categories. So go check those out. They're releasing a new category each day and see if we made it into any of those categories. They're in some of the technical ones right now, so I don't think we made it into those. But check back frequently and vote for us. But I think that'll wrap up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 171, The Phantom Menace, Act 1. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.
Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, Episode 6, Blood of a Jedi. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there came a time of revolution, when rebels united to challenge a tyrannical empire. Now the end game in this cosmic struggle has come. A combined rebel fleet is on its way to the forest moon of the planet Endor to destroy the Empire's new Death Star. But the rebels are flying into a trap. Aboard the battle station, Luke Skywalker has fallen captive to Darth Vader. Luke's desperate appeals to turn him from the dark side of the Force have failed to move the man who was once Anakin Skywalker, his father. Below, on the lush green sanctuary moon, a rebel commando unit has penetrated the underground complex from which the Death Star's defensive shield is generated. But the rebels do not realize that their presence there is also a part of the grand strategy hatched by their deadliest enemy, Emperor Palpatine.
Freeze! Everybody, hands in the air!
Hey! Get your hands away from those controls!
Chewie, cover those two in the corner!
Han, the fleet will be here any minute!
Major Jerlin!
Yes, right here, General.
The clock's running out, Major. Let's do it!
Demolition squad, up! Start planning your charges!
Come on, security team!
Disarm the prisoners! Get them up against that far wall!
What happened to the droids and the Ewoks? Didn't they follow us in?
I guess they stayed back at the edge of the forest. Han, if this shield isn't down when Lando and the others emerge from hyperspace, they'll be like targets in a shooting gallery.
Ah, relax. We're gonna blow this place clear over the Death Star.
Throw me another demo charge! Come on! Come on!
I do hope that Princess and General Solo hurry up. No, I have no idea where the other Ewoks have gone. I'll ask Wicket. Wicket, calm yourself. Stormtroopers? Where? Oh, my. Imperial Scout Walkers. This is an ambush. The Princess and the others will be captured, and the Rebel fleet is already on its way. Oh, this is a catastrophe. Wicket, you can't abandon us. You said the Ewoks would be loyal to the Rebel Alliance. Artoo, where are you going? Wait, come back, Artoo! Stay with me!
Assault Wing, this is Gold Leader. Prepare for emergence from hyperspace. Now! There's the Death Star. Right on the mark. Need Numb, take the controls while I form up the wing. Assault Wing, all flight leaders report in.
Red Leader standing by.
Gray Leader standing by.
Green Leader standing by.
Bungle S foils in attack position.
This is Admiral Akbar. Commence your approach on the Death Star. And may the Force be with us.
Assault Wing, form up on me. What? Try again, Neen. We gotta get some kind of reading on that deflector shield, up or down. How could the Imperials be jamming us if they don't know we're coming? Assault Wing, break off the attack. Death Star shield is still up.
I get no reading, boss. Are you sure?
I'll craft, pull up and regroup.
This is Akbar. It's a trap. Our vessel's take evasive action. Reflight, stick close to holding sector MV-7.
Admiral, we have enemy ships in sector 47.
Admiral, we got TIE fighters coming in.
They're all over the place. They're boxing us in.
Accelerate to attack speed. Draw them away from the cruiser.
Copy, Goldie.
Yeah, I see it. Only the TIE fighters are attacking. I wonder what those Star Destroyers are waiting for.
Boss, something's happening over on that Death Star.
Forget it for now. We can't get at it through that deflector shield and it can't hurt us.
Heads up! Heads up! Death Star is firing!
Death Star took out one of the cruisers. That thing is operational. Home One, this is Gold Leader.
We saw it, Gold Leader. All craft regroup for a general withdrawal.
We won't get another chance at that battle station, Admiral.
We have no choice. Our cruisers can't repel firepower of that magnitude.
Han, we'll have that deflector shield down. We've got to give him more time.
Come and see, young Skywalker. From here on the Death Star, we shall have an excellent view of the battle.
You're not going to win, Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, no. Your rebel fleet has discovered my trap, but not soon enough to save itself from annihilation.
You think it is your powers that have brought us to this moment? You are mistaken. It's the Force.
Indeed. The dark side. Isn't that so, Lord Vader?
As you say, my master.
From here, boy, you will witness the final destruction of the Alliance.
No, it won't. It can't end like this.
I see you looking to your lightsaber. You want it, don't you? The hate is swelling in you now. Here it lies, next to my hand. Take your Jedi weapon.
That would be your final triumph, wouldn't it?
The dark side is the ultimate power, Luke.
Look out there. Your comrades are being exterminated. Use your lightsaber, young Jedi. I am unarmed. Strike me down with it. Give in to your anger.
No!
It is unavoidable. It is your destiny, young Skywalker. You, like your father, are now mine.
Keep moving, you rebel trash. You there. Keep your hands behind your head.
Get your hands off me.
Leia, stay close to me.
Rebel prisoners, halt. Stay in line and keep your hands raised.
Han, we've got to do something.
Yeah, well, a battalion of Imperial scout walkers could make that a problem. Chewie, you okay? Good, stay ready.
Han, Lando and the fleet are finished if we don't neutralize that shield generator.
We're not going to be helping them if we get ourselves mowed down by the
Imperials. Attention, prisoners. You are going to be transported...
I say, over there.
3PO and R2.
Where are you looking for me?
Where did those droids come from? Get over there and take them into custody.
What's going on?
I don't know. Get set for anything.
Grab those two droids on the hill.
There's no need for violence. As a matter of fact, there are some local denizens eager to make your acquaintance.
They're springing an ambush.
You men there, form a firing line.
We can't, sir. Our men are in the line of fire.
Chewie, take out the guards.
Watch out. Those Ewok arrows aren't choosing who they hit.
Leia, grab a blaster. Gotta get back inside that bunker.
The Ewoks are throwing boulders with catapults.
Yeah, either that or they got some mighty slow meteors around here. Try the bunker door. I'll see if I can spot Derlin.
Access code's been changed. We need R2-D2.
Try the Connelly.
R2, where are you? We need you and 3PO at the bunker door right away.
The strike team's pinned down. Looks like it's up to us.
Code Leader, this is Red Leader. Repeat your last message.
Sit closer, Wedge. Move as close as you can to those Star Destroyers and engage them at point-blank range.
At that distance, we won't last long against those dreadnoughts.
We'll last longer than we would against that Death Star. We might just take a few of them with us. All flights regroup. Close it up and stick with your wingmen.
Come on, Han, old buddy. Don't let me down.
Skywalker, your fleet is lost. Your companions on the sanctuary moon will not survive. There is no escape, my young apprentice.
Battle's not over yet.
Good. I can feel your anger. I am defenseless. Here. Take up your lightsaber! Strike me down with all your hatred!
No.
The hour has come for you to join us, Luke.
No.
Then you must watch your friends perish!
No!
So, Jedi summons his lightsaber and it flies to his eye.
I won't let you kill them!
Yes, you will! Beyond your control now, Luke.
I have to stop him.
You will fail.
Glorious. Your aggressive feelings, boy. Let the hate flow through you.
No. I won't do it.
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
I will not fight you, Father.
You're unwise to lower your defenses.
Dodge and leave, foolish boy! There isn't enough room in the galaxy for you to avoid your fate.
Your thoughts betray you, Father. I feel the good in you, the conflict.
There is no conflict. Come down from the catwalk!
You couldn't bring yourself to kill me before, and I don't believe you'll destroy me now!
Cut the catwalk out from under him, Vader! I would see the last of the Jedi brought low! You underestimate the power of the dark side, Luke! If you will not fight, then you will meet your destiny!
You don't mean that, Father.
I mean this! To the dark side, Luke.
Never!
Go after him, Vader. Bring him to ground.
I will bring him to you, my master.
Hurry, R2. Get that blast door open.
Now or never, R2.
Please permit my counterpart to concentrate, General.
Stormtrooper! R2!
Lousy back shooter!
R2, you've been shot! Oh! R2, why did you have to be so brave?
I guess I could apply a little Corellian overdrive, hotwire the door.
I'll cover you. How can those Ewoks hold their own against the Imperials?
That's their turf and their ambush makes all the difference.
Come on, Han! We're running out of time!
I think I got it. Here goes!
Wait! You've locked the outer shield into place over the blast door.
Ah, crummy Imperial equipment!
Oh, my stars, Princess Leia! She's been shot.
Where'd they get you, Leia?
Sure.
Freeze, Rebels!
Oh, dear.
Nobody move.
I guess they got us.
I've still got my blaster. When I give the word, out of my way, fast.
I love you.
I know.
Get on your feet.
You heard the man.
Ready? Now!
Nice play, Princess!
Just a little Corellian overdrive.
Look out! Scout Walker closing in on us.
Don't shoot! We give up!
It stopped.
General Solo, I never knew you could be so persuasive.
They're opening up the top turret.
Look, it's Chewie!
He's captured a Scout Walker.
Chewie, get down here! No, no, wait. I'm coming up there. I got an idea. Cover the bunker door with your guns.
Looks like Major Gerland and the Ewoks are coming to help.
Fine, they can help us throw a little surprise for you. Scout Walker 7 to Shield Control Room, come in.
This is the Shield Control Room. What's your status out there?
Battle's over out here, Commander. The Rebels are fleeing into the woods, but we need reinforcements.
Outstanding. I'll send 3 squads. Unsealing the blast door now.
That's very, very accommodating of you, Commander.
This is a day that will long be remembered.
You got that right, pal. Hold it! Nobody move!
Drop your weapons and place your hands above your heads.
Let's move it! We give up!
Major Gerland, did you recover any demolition charges?
Yeah, plenty.
Get your teams busy.
We're on it, General.
The Rebel fleet must be on the ropes by now.
Yeah, but in about 60 seconds, the real party's gonna start.
And we've still had no word of Master Luke.
Show yourself, Luke. A Jedi does not skulk in shadowy corners.
I will not fight you.
Give yourself to the dark side. It is the only way you can save your friends.
Never.
Yes, your thoughts betray you. Your feelings for them are strong. Especially for your sister. So you have a twin sister. Your feelings have now betrayed her too. Obi-Wan was wise to hide her from you. Now his failure is complete. You will not turn to the dark side. Then perhaps your sister will.
No! Leave her alone!
That's it! Give me to the power of the dark.
I won't let you hurt her!
You cannot stop me!
I must stop you! Oh.
Mother!
Splendid! The son has struck off the father's hand, even as the father struck off the son. Your hate has made you powerful, young Skywalker. Now, fulfill your destiny and take your father's place at my side. Finish him.
I told you no.
Why don't you strike Luke?
Slay him, or I'll slay you.
I'll never turn to the dark side. You failed, Palpatine. I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
And the last of them. So be it, Jedi. You are at the threshold of your ultimate defeat.
Control Leader, the Death Star shield is down. Commence your attack on their main reactor.
Told you Han and the others wouldn't let us down. Neen, retarget gunnery computers. Red Group, Gold Group, all remaining fighters, form up on me. We're going in.
We copy, Gold Leader. Here's the access tunnel coming up, boss.
Tighten up your formation. We're flying straight to the heart of the Death Star.
We've got TIE fighters on an intercept vector.
Keep them off our backs, but don't stop to engage. We have to hit that reactor.
Going in, Gold Leader. Tight quarters in here, boss.
We're just here for a short visit. Neen, lock on to the strongest power source you can find. It should be the reactor. Good. Keep us on that signal. Time to roll the dice.
The Death Star is doomed, Palpatine, and so is your empire.
Since you will not be turned, young Skywalker, you will be destroyed. Behold the naked energies of the dark side, the lightning of pure willpower. Now, feel its fury! Young fool, only now at the end do you understand! Lord Vader, get to your feet. Rise, I say.
Yes, my master.
When I've slain this last Jedi, cast his body down the core shaft.
No!
Yes! Your feeble skills are no match for the power of the dark side. You now pay the price for your lack of vision! He is my slave, not your father. Now, young Skywalker, you will die.
Father!
Die! Yes!
My son!
Vader! Release me! Vader! I command you! Put me down!
I will! Down the core shaft! Down to your death!
Vader! I am your master!
Darth Vader's master! But not Anakin Skywalker!
Father! Father!
It is over.
Two, peel off and take the rest of the assault wing back to the surface. Try to get those TIE fighters and make them follow you out.
Copy, Gold Leader.
Glad you stick with me.
I read your boss.
What's up, employment, Tommy?
I see it. Whoa! There goes the paint job.
Reactor chamber coming up.
Neen, prepare to fire.
There's the reactor, boss.
You go for the power regulator on the north tower, Wedge. I'll target the central matrix.
Copy, Gold Leader.
As an old pal of mine would say, let's blow this thing and go home. Steady. Fire!
Confirmed hits on both targets, boss.
Now get clear. Go! Go! reactor overloads, this whole place is finished. Pour it on!
Pour it on!
Shuttle together. I have to save you.
You have saved me, Luke. Tell your sister you were right about me.
Father, I won't leave you.
I'm proud that you've grown into the man I once wanted.
Surely the Death Star can't endure many more.
No, nothing could.
Here comes the big one. There! This is the payoff! Yes!
They did it! Oh my! The Death Star is utterly destroyed!
Yes, it is.
Leia, I'm sure Luke wasn't on that thing when it blew.
He wasn't.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I can feel it.
You love him, don't you?
Well, yes.
Fine. I understand. When he comes back, I won't get in your way.
Han, he's my brother.
Brother? Then you were... Well, then Luke isn't...
Why don't you stop worrying about Luke and talk about yourself?
Me?
And about the way you feel about me? About how there aren't enough scoundrels in my life?
Look, Leia, when this war's over, you go back to being an Alliance leader, and I go back to being a guy with a starship for hire. A princess and a smuggler, the odds against the two of us making
Han, never tell me the odds. Just kiss.
Pardon me, Master Luke, but the Ewoks' victory celebrations will be starting momentarily.
I'll be right along, 3PO.
But first, you are going to light Lord Vader's funeral. That is your father's funeral pyre, sir.
What could be more fitting? It's a night of lights, Ewok victory fires, Rebel fireworks, even the last pieces of the Death Star burning up in the atmosphere.
Put that way, Master Luke. It does sound appropriate.
I burn his armor, and with it the name of Darth Vader. May the name of Anakin Skywalker be a light that guides the Jedi for generations to come.
Master Luke, General Calrissian and the others are due at any moment.
I'll be right along. Rest well, Father. The Force is with you.
There you are.
Hey, Lando. You did it, right? You kept your word.
What?
Not a scratch. You said you'd bring back the Falcon without a scratch on it.
Well, nothing that's left on her is scratched. All the scratched parts got knocked off along the way.
Knocked off?
Oh, Han, buck up. Here come Luke and 3PO.
And look, R2, D2, and fully functional again. R2, when I tell the Ewoks the story of today's events, I shall give you full credit for helping me accomplish my mission. What do you mean you were the one who saved the day? All you managed to do was to get your circuits right.
3PO,
when you...
I'm sure there'll be enough acclaim for everyone.
I heartily agree with you, sir.
Luke. Sorry to hear about your father.
Thanks, Lando.
But take a deep breath. It's freedom in the air. Come on! The party's starting!
Yeah, that's for me. Chewie, grab us a good spot. You ready, Luke?
Be right along, Han.
Don't be long, brother. Han has to explain how he wants to make you an uncle.
What? Hey, now wait a second.
Let's go, Han.
Uncle? I never said... Well, you never told me that... Nobody mentioned anything.
Oh, stop worrying. We'll make it up as we go along.
Pardon me, Master Luke, but may I ask why you are staring into the darkness? What are you looking at?
Not what, 3PO. Who? Don't you see them? Three comrades in arms. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Master Yoda, and Anakin Skywalker.
My photoreceptors must be malfunctioning, sir. I don't see anything.
But they're here. Their fire is back in the universe. Let it burn, high and bright, to be seen by friend and foe. The Jedi have returned.
Star Wars: Return of the Jedi by Brian Daley. Based on characters and situations created by George Lucas and on the screenplay by Lawrence Kasdan and George Lucas. Featured in the cast were Anthony Daniels as C-3PO, David Burney as Anakin Skywalker, Joshua Farden as Luke Skywalker, Ari Gross as Lando Calrissian, Paul Hecht as the Emperor, Perry King as Han Solo, John Matthews as Wedge, Brock Peters as Darth Vader, Mark Adair Rios as Admiral Ackbar, Anne Sachs as Princess Leia, and Tom Virtue as Major Derlin. Also heard in the series were Samantha Bennett, Ian Gomez, Rick Hall, Andy Hawks, Sherman Howard, Carl Johnson, John Capelos, Ron LaPaz, Joe Liss, Paul Mercier, Stephen Petrarca, Jonathan Penner, Gil Siegel, Nia Vardalos, and Ron West. This is Ken Hiller. Star Wars: Return of the Jedi was directed by John Madden and produced by Tom Vagley. The co-producer was Julie Hartley. Sound design for Lucasfilm by Ben Burt. Music by John Williams. Post-production was realized with assistance from Tom Mudge and John Scherf by Tom Vagley. Star Wars: Return of the Jedi was produced by Highbridge Audio in association with Tom Vagley Productions and LA Theater Works and with the cooperation of Lucasfilm Limited. This production is dedicated to the memory of Brian Daley.